Good afternoon all. I might make a start on introducing this session as people are trickling through. As I'm sure you're familiar with the concurrent sessions, we'll have presentation and time for question and answer. The mic is in the middle, and as these sessions are recorded, it'd be great if you could state your name. I have the pleasure of introducing Ivan and Ina, and I'll just run through their bios before welcoming them to the stage. Ivan Lebedev is a scheme actuary for return to work. He has 10 years of experience in workers' compensation with the diverse expertise in areas such as reserving, claims agent performance assessment, and premium rating. His interests lie in developing business solutions by using actuarial and data analytics techniques. Ina Kalishkina has over 20 years of commercial consulting experience across a range of industries with a focus on insurance data analysis. Ina uses organizational data to develop analytic solutions that provide evidence-based actionable insights for business outcomes. Her expertise cover end-to-end analytic solution development, including design, implementation, and delivery team management. Ina maintains connections with cutting-edge technology development through regular contribution to tertiary analytic curriculum and delivery of guest lectures. As founding chair of the Institute of Analytics Professions of Australia, Ina regularly contributes to national and international conferences on data science and its applications to real-world problems, and this is one of them. So I'm looking forward to the presentation. If I could get you to join with me in welcoming them.
Thanks for the introduction, and thank you for your interest to this topic. We will divide the presentation into two parts. So I'd like to acknowledge all co-authors or contributors to this work. So we have four co-authors, Ina and Marcus. They both work for a company called Analytic Consulting, and Colin Koo and myself from Return to Work SA. And we'll be talking today about an attempt to perform computer-based triage of claims. So we'll cover today, will be a slide on motivation, why we're doing it, why we want to share it with this audience. I'll talk about business context, the entitlements, what exactly we're trying to predict. And then Ina will take over and speak about the methodology and the data science methods used, and we'll do an overview of toolbox, the methods that we have employed. And then we'll cover, of course, results and key learnings. So why we're doing this? Well, to share what we learned through this and to discuss the difficulties, and ultimately I would see this session as successful as if we encourage some of you who may be thinking about trying modern data science for to get your hands dirty and do it yourselves, if you actually do it, because it's interesting, and I think it has a lot of potential in insurance work. So to set the business context, the whole thing started about a year and a half ago. I initiated it. I wanted to do it as a proof of concept case study. I kept hearing about the power of data analytics, big data, data science, but never done it myself, and wanted to learn something and just to see whether, given our return to work SA data, we can make meaningful predictions and put all these fancy tools to good practical use. So that's how it came about, and we teamed up with Ina and Marcus from Analytic Consulting, a small local company here in Adelaide, not sort of to do the work for us, but to work together and to, you know, as a team, so that Return to Work SA would get some of that skills and expertise in-house. For those of you who don't know, just a quick overview of workers' comp claims. Under the law, injured workers are entitled to income support and medical costs and other entitlements. when this work was done, we were still under the old act, and under the old act, income support entitlements was pretty much to age 65, unless someone goes to work. Now it's a capped scheme, so we have 2 years of income support unless a person is seriously injured. But for seriously injured, you don't really need data analytics to predict the duration of a claim. And then medical goes for one more year after the end of income support. And particularly in the old scheme, to a lesser extent in the new one, the claim duration is the main cost driver. The longer a claim stays on benefit, the more we have to pay every day, and it all, you know, ticks over and accumulates. So it is very important for practical purposes to be able to identify high-risk claims, claims with a higher than average chance of continuing long, because that would allow one to photo-target case management efforts, well, kind of, I think, obvious for most people. So the aims of the study were, we will start at 13-week milestone, and knowing all the wealth of information about a claim at 13 weeks, we set out to predict whether a claim would go over, whether or not it would go over a year. Again, because it was a pilot proof of concept sort of project, there was a little bit of cheating involved in this. I deliberately chose 13 weeks because at 13 weeks we do know a lot about the claim. I wanted the project to be successful, so I thought if we load, give it enough information, then you know, it will be successful. I'll demonstrate to my management that you know, it all works, and we'll take it from there. So in practice, I suppose it's much more useful to be able to make these predictions early in the life of a claim. But again, treat it as what it is. It was a proof of concept case study. So we wanted to, you know, identify, say, high-risk claims, claims with a high risk of long duration, and also to look at what are the most important predictors, what, you know, was out of curiosity, what is it that we should be mindful of. So the modeling data set, what, as I said, everything we know about a claim. We know a whole lot of things about a claim at 13 weeks. So you would have all the worker personal information, obviously, I mean, some of the things you know straight away. The important things that are known by 13 weeks are is the data on in injury coding. There is a national injury coding system, TOOCS coding. Some of you may know what it is. And it codes in a standard way bodily location, the nature of injury, mechanism of injury, agency of injury, and something else, I think. We know, though. And by 13 weeks, generally speaking, all this coding would have been done, so the information would be there. So we had that. Then we had, obviously, employer and industry data. And then for people who had previous claims, we would have all the history of prior claims of the worker. So altogether, when it's kind of an infinite number of variables in a way from practical purposes, we distilled it down to about 200 potential predictors that we, you know, collated into a data set in the form that, you know, allowed us to start working. So at this stage, I'll hand over to Ina, and she will cover the methodology and the data science aspects of the work.
Thank you very much, Ivan. So, the first question is, why did we even need a new methodology in prediction of workers' comp claims length? So after all, generalized linear models are quite effective methods, and why bother, so to speak? But in fact, while they are effective, very often they are not efficient. I don't know what your experience is in terms of preparation of data for a GLM. Can take quite a long time, easily weeks. Because a GLM is a linear model, and it has a lot of assumptions, and the data needs to be nice and tidy. So before you throw it in, you actually have to spend a lot of time. And then you have unpleasant issues such as highly categorical fields, such as your salary, for example, or your injury classification, so nature of injury, lots of categories, mechanism of injury, lots of categories, and so. And then if these categories start intersecting, so you want to understand what is there an effect of certain nature of injury and a bodily location. So in other words, if you have, for example, a dislocated shoulder, is it the same as dislocated wrist in terms of how long the worker will stay off work? So if you want to take all these combinations of possible locations of injury and injury nature, suddenly you end up with a huge number of categories. And GLMs they will just choke on that number of categories. So that means that we would have to deal with this data in a different way. This is what... And another interesting thing about this project is that the organization didn't just want an equation. They wanted business rules. They wanted a scalable, so to speak, business rules, something they can put into their machines, and then these business rules can be used for scoring of the claim database. So as you can see, linear models were not quite what was needed here, which is fine. And that's why we used something more advanced. We used cutting-edge data science techniques, which are complicated to learn and use, but they produce really easy-to-understand business rules that then make sense to the user, which makes it obviously useful for the organization. Here, at the screen, you just see the steps of data analytics process. I put it here just to show you that it's a very, well, it's a very rigorous process, starting from business understanding. So what it is, we need to know what it is that we want to, derive. What is the problem that we want to solve? Once we know that, then we want to understand what is the data available in the organization, which is what was brilliantly done by Ivan and Colin from Oxford Ivan. Then we need to do preliminary analysis, understand are there any issues in the data that we need to address. Main analysis, results evaluation and testing, and deployment and reporting. So as you can see, it's a process that could be a bit of loop in here, but generally, and each of these stages is very clearly outlined. I will not go into details here, but it's if you're interested, we can send you this diagram. Why I even mention this here is that very often when people start using data science in organizations, because they don't follow the process, it doesn't quite work. So for us it worked because we did things right. Okay, anyway, so what is it that we did? So we knew what our business problem was. Now it was the question of how do we work with our data? And first of all, we of course did data review, data audit, and pre-processing, just making sure that any strange combinations of, for example, nature and location, such as, eye disease that is located somewhere on the elbow. So nothing like that. So all these strange cases were sort of put aside, not included in the analysis. So once we have done our data review and cleaning, we then looked at the predictive potential of our data. What this means is, and on our diagram before, it will be preliminary analysis. So what this means, as a one set, there were about 200 variables in the data set. Quite a lot, right? And the data was describing 13 weeks of workers' experience. So we know a lot about them. And yet, it was very difficult to predict whether or not a person will stay longer than 1 year on income maintenance claims or not. Let me show you this diagram here. So, just to give you an idea of how of the amount of variability in the data, let us look at this graph. So what we have here is this is number of claim duration. So this is claim duration in weeks. On the horizontal axis you have age, and each of these each of the parts of the diagram shows a combination of injury nature and injury location. So you would think that if you know injury location, injury nature, and the age, you kind of can predict more or less closely how long the person is going to stay on the planet. But what these graphs are telling us that this is not true. The blue line here is the line of the best fit. And you can see how variability is absolutely huge on all of these graphs. And you will see that the injury nature and location combinations are not at all exotic. So we have dislocation of knee here. That should be, you know, quite straightforward. So if you know age and that it is a dislocation of knee, it should be, you know, pretty homogeneous. But it's not. You can see the spread of the data. And the same is true, for example, for shoulder bursitis here, or shoulder tendonitis here. Again, nothing exotic, nothing strange about these intonation location combinations, but that's what we see. And this is typical of many other combinations. So there are factors there, external perhaps to the injury nature itself, that influence how long somebody stays on claim. And we can only we can guess about some of them. But what this is saying to us is extremely important to understand what else influences the length of stay. So obviously it's not just described by what you would expect it would be. Something else is at play. So, anyway, so back to here. So given this strong variability, we wanted to assess the predictive potential of the data. In other words, these 200 variables that we have, are they enough to explain the variability or not? And this is actually a very interesting advantage that data science has over, for example, a linear method. You can actually ask a question. Do I have enough data? Does information that I have adequately explain what is happening in real life? And you can use, for example, you can use for that such methods as random forests, gradient boosting, or loss regression. So basically, you take a very powerful data science method, you throw your data, your clean data, into the method, and you ask how many percent of my variability is explained by my 200 variables. And to make sure that the results won't be spurious, I actually used all three methods and compared the results. And the results were consistent, and they told me that the variability explained was about 20%. Not enough, right? Let's see again what was in the data. So, work information, gender, occupation, income, so on, employee information, injury information, previous claims history, and you would think that's enough. But obviously there was something else. So we then, at this stage, so when we saw that that was the case, we also, this is just to illustrate to you the extent of a possible prediction. So we wanted business rules, remember? And from that data, using the most powerful methods we could, that's the maximum that we could get. So to read this diagram here, you will see that overall there were about 18,000 records, and this probability 0.55, these people would stay on income maintenance longer than a year. And all we could do with that data was just to see that, some of them, 12% of them, stay, have a bit larger probability, 0.7, to be on income maintenance after a year. Anyway, so in other words, the 200 variables were not enough, and the data needed enrichment. And, you know, where do you get enrichment? Well, first of all, we looked at the external research. We did research, and we wanted to understand what is it that can drive lengths of stay on income maintenance other than the factors that we had. And secondly, we sat down with ResourceWorks Australia subject matter experts, and we asked them, what do you think? These are the variables that we have. They're not explaining the situation. Tell us what else is important. And I must say that both approaches were very useful. What we were told by experts and by research is that, first of all, lag between claim lodgement and injury occurrence. Another important information, what kind of treatment all these people were getting. So what were the providers? What procedures were involved? So basically all the information about treatment, even the postcode of the clinic and the name of the clinic or the doctor. So number of visits, specialty of providers. So we added this to the data. Another interesting one, information on potent opioid prescriptions. Now, this is an interesting one. This really describes addiction. So if somebody is in pain, they get prescribed, you know, opioid, they become addicted to it, or they can sell it to people, and then it makes total sense of them if they don't like the job. It makes sense to go on, you know, on claim again, get the benefits, and get, you know, the drug. It indeed turned out to be quite predictive in this variable. And finally, a very interesting one that we found was that very predictive of whether or not somebody is going to stay longer than a year is details of the previous claim, exactly what injury and what location had their previous claim, the one immediately before the current claim. All this data were added to our original data, and again we repeated the exercise. So predictive modeling stage 2, we now had better predictive power, and we derived business rules to identify claims that had high risk of long duration. I will show you the rules in a second, but the important predictors were found, well, of course, intonation, location. And in fact, what we did is we combined nature and location and put the combined variable into our model. Because what we found is if you just use them separately, they're not as predictive. So we actually put not just shoulder in the variable of location and sort of dislocation in the variable of nature, but it was shoulder dislocation as one category, and so on. So that one, that variable was extremely important. Work is age, occupation, and industry, of course, important. Land within injury and report, yep, important. Previous history, very important. And service provider experience, so identity and specialty of service providers, were very important too. Which kind of makes sense, because you think that if somebody is if the provider's specialty is psychiatrist, probably it's a proxy for the person having depression, right? And if it is radiology, it's probably means that they were doing X-rays. But an interesting one here was not even between in terms of specialty of the doctor being the proxy for the injury itself. But actually, there were interesting differences beyond that. Mm-hmm. For example, if a person with a mental injury, including depression, anxiety, so if the person with a psychological injury attended a psychiatrist, the length of stay was much smaller than if they attended a GP. In other words, there's possibly a message here. So here was somebody who, yes, had the same kind of depression, and they went to the specialist and wanted to be treated. So they really put an effort into it. And somebody who went to a GP, possibly, was not as serious about getting better. Or it could be another interpretation, for example, that GPs are not as good as the specialists in treating depression, possibly. But in other words, but the learning out of it is clear. If there is somebody with depression, they should see a psychiatrist if we want them to get back to work sooner. And this is just one example of importance of this. Okay. Now, you remember, I have shown you a larger version of this diagram before. You remember, just could break it into two groups. And that was it, because there wasn't enough, data. And after we enriched our data with additional information, our claim segmentation became much better. And you can see it on the right-hand side here. Of course, it's not the full segmentation, but just to give you an idea. So you will see that our claims now are broken into six main segments. There are more, smaller segments, but these are the main segments. So here we have a segment of people who will stay on benefits for longer than a year. This is probability 0.8. So 4 out of 5 will stay on benefits from this group. Here, a similar situation. Almost 0.8, 4 out of 5 will stay after a year. These people will stay on benefits for this probability 0.7. These two are high risk segments. There are 10% of them, probability 0.7. And segments 5 and 6 are those who will who will be off the benefits with probability 0.7. So they will stay with only probability of 0.3. In other words, these are lower risk group. So if we want to concentrate our efforts on a certain claim segment, we probably will look at these two. Here we have high risk claims, and if we looked at the business rules, there are actually some interventions that can be taken to improve the situation. Of course, so sometimes if there is a really, really serious injury, you cannot do much. People have to stay for long. But sometimes, you will see that this can be improved. I kept saying that the rules were easy to use, they were interpretable, I wanted to show you a bit, a little example of that. So what I was saying, that the rules would be easily interpretable, they can be used to score, new claims in terms of risk, and they could be easily expressed as SQL code. Well, here is an example of such a rule. That's one of the high-risk segments. And what you see here is, it says, nature and location of AGR, lower back disc displacement, it's one example, or neck disc displacement, or... And there is a list of them. So there is a list of nature and location of injury. And most frequent visited provider specialty is such and such. And there will be a couple of other conditions. So in other words, the business rules, as you can see, easy to read and understand. And they are easily coded, and they kind of make sense. So if somebody has lower back disc displacement, it's a serious injury, they probably are more likely to stay longer on benefits. So that's our result. And I will go into the toolbox description or our methods description in a second, but this was the project results, and Ivan will comment on whether it was useful and successful.
Thanks, Anna. I think it definitely was successful. As far as the useful, the practical application of these results goes, by the time we finished this project, times have moved on, and we were pretty much at the beginning of the new scheme, which is capped at 2 years. So the business relevance of that kind of diminished greatly. So we haven't implemented these particular rules in any real-time system. But the challenge we faced with the new system was to develop an automated triage for deciding whether or not to send allocate a mobile case manager to a particular claim. So what we... The setting is a bit different. So it's knowing the information from the sort of first time contact with the injured worker, whatever case manager can ask in the initial interview, to make a decision on whether or not to send a mobile case manager. So we used this sort of approach and technique to do that, the new problem, face the new challenge. What we found out that yes, that it could be done. That system is now being implemented by our ICT department. So we expect it to start working in January. So although we haven't directly use these results, but definitely the learnings, the approach, I suppose the working relationship to a large extent, all that was used to a maximum extent. Probably running out of time. I think we'll stop here and skip the toolbox overview, just because we're short on time. And if anyone's interested, the paper is online and the conference material. So please, you know, have a read and feel free to ask, send us questions in the email. We'll be happy to talk to you.
I think in the time that we do have left, which is probably 5 minutes, I think there might be time for one or two questions. So the mic is available in the middle, and if you can state your name, that'd be great.
Hi, Amanda Aiken. That was really interesting. I have one technical question. I don't know whether you can answer it or not. You said that you found by combining nature and location of injury, the model gave some better predictions. So do you know why the model wasn't able to do that itself, and why it helped to have human intervention in this case?
The model wouldn't be able to do it itself, so to speak, because... we have 18,000 cases here, and that means that we don't have enough data for the model to look properly at all the interactions of all cases. It immediately would create a huge sparseness situation. So if we had 18 million, but because we didn't, we only had to then push the... And another side of it, of course, is that a lot of interruptions just don't happen. For example, if there is an eye disease and a knee as a location, it doesn't make sense. So, but the combinations that do make sense, still there are 1,500 of them. So again, the data is not enough. So that's why. Does it make sense?
Bruce? Yes,
So thank you very much. That was very interesting. I have one sort of comment based on the observation that I've worked with TAC data, which is I'm surprised that Turk and Beast, you have people who have developed persistent pain, got addicted, started, you know, doctor shopping and started selling. You know, I think for Turk and Beast, you can see, at least that's my experience with works with data, many people, even some people who have had mental health claims, haven't visited their psychiatrist for the first time in three first months of the claim. So many of these services, like psychiatry, surgeries, you know, are quite delayed. You know, they come in the 6 months, you know, second half of the year after the injury. I'm wondering, what was the frequency? Was it very prevalent? You know, like, were there many people? And the other thing, because TAC presented something on clustering yesterday, and in your graphs I noticed that there is lots of noise. I was wondering if you had taken the same approach as TAC and got rid of some of the very short-term claims, you know, of people, you know, with very severe injuries first, and you had a better population or sample to start with, your prediction power would have improved a lot because you're not putting everyone, you know, from zero, like 1 days to 1,000 days in the model and trying to predict. So a layer of clustering and then applying the same thing, like, you know, in a hierarchical sort of structure.
Thank you. So, this clustering, you see, the answer to this is luckily data science doesn't, data science allows us not to be so, not to put so much effort into filtering out data. You can afford, actually, with these powerful methods, you can afford to have them right in there. See, clustering is still a linear method, in effect. It's sort of, there are some clustering methods that are enhanced by more advanced approaches, but still, because many clustering methods are still based on distance, you're kind of limited, you very much depend on how much pre-processing you have done for your data. And that means that your analysis becomes less efficient. So you spend a lot of time sitting and preparing your data. And mind you, one side of it is you are spending time on data prep, more than you would more than you perhaps need. And the other side is that the danger here is that next year, when you want to apply your scoring to new cases, you are risking to score something because you are, you're taking out data from your model. You are filtering out data which may be important. So you can work around that, I suppose. But see, so suddenly you're starting, like, if you're working with directly with clustering and you're taking away part of the data, you are taking risk that you can miss score something. And secondly, you spend a lot of time doing that. The beauty of working with data science methods is that they're designed to work with unwieldy, noisy data, which means that you don't have to do it. In fact, it's inbuilt in there that if there is a group that is different from the rest, you can actually ask the method to put it separately. So that's why, in other words, you don't, you're lucky you don't have to worry about filtering the data.
Thank you. I think we might be out of time for questions. Can I encourage you to have a chat with them after the session, given the bell's already gone? Would you like to join me in thanking Ivan and Ina for the session?